Football fans, I'm sure we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game, but with the latest no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be a winner once a single point is scored. New customers who bet just $1 on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the NFL action. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code THPN. This week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 years or older. New Jersey, Indiana, and Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and a $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Want to go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 163 of the big show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? Another wild Wednesday, midweek hump day. Here we are. Thank you very much for tuning in. Didn't we just do this? I was saying to my wife today, I said, geez, it's Tuesday night. I've got to go record something. So as I sit here at 9:30 on a Tuesday night, here we go. I left my sticky note in the truck. I forgot all about it, but I think I have a few interesting topics today. I want to get your guys' feedback on something as well. For the regular listeners, you've already heard this, so fast forward about a minute and a half. But I was just gonna say we're back. I know there's been numerous solo episodes here in a row, and no, I'm not just turning this into a rant show, and I will get back to the player interviews. I think, as I brought up before, we're going to wait until the new year. I've talked to some players, getting a few things lined up, and I think in 2022, we're going to start off fresh really bring some interviews for you guys. I think you guys will really enjoy them. A couple guys that have never done podcasts before, so hopefully I can get them on the line, and really looking forward to talking to them. And I brought it up a bunch of times, and I know actually Joe brought it up on his podcast here. And it's true. I will say that the interviews can get really, tiresome. When the guy shows up on time, like when he's supposed to, everything goes well, they're really fun and really rewarding. But after you get ghosted a few times and chase guys around and stuff like that, it really takes the passion out of it for you, and at least for me it does. And and like I said, had a few, not lately, well, I guess last month, the month before, but had a couple guys ghost me and stuff, and it gets to be too much. And I just needed a break from it, really. And then plus with everything that was going on in my life personally, I just didn't really have time to set things up with people. So I know the last little while, because the reason I bring it up is I've mentioned it a bunch of times, every episode here for the last little while about the solo stuff, but it got mentioned to me in a couple of private messages, hey, are you ever doing interviews again or whatever? And it's like, yeah, I'm going to be doing interviews again. Don't worry about that. But just hang in there and give me some time, guys. And we'll just get through the silly season here in December. And like I said, in the new year, you know, I'll definitely be back with some stuff. Also, I'm going to start doing a few more interviews with maybe on the Sunday shows, just with fellow fight fans. I talk to, older fried chicken fans, fried chicken board members will remember Chris Y2J. I spoke with him on the phone actually last week, and really looking forward to getting him on the show. Hopefully we can set up a time. That actually might happen here in the week or two. I might have that interview. But I think going forward, I enjoy doing the solo episodes. They're easy. You just hit record and, you know, do a list or, you know, find some articles or what have you. And you guys have been great sending articles. So, that makes life a lot easier as well. Like Mike today, I'm going to be doing an article that he posted on Twitter. I'm not saying he sent it to me specifically, but I'm certainly going to use it. Sorry about that. I don't know, my program here kind of went goofy for a sec. Hold on, I'm just writing that down. If anybody else has any articles, hockeyfights@hotmail.com, send them over to me, send the link to me. I'd love to see them, and they'll do it on the air here. Like I said, it makes my job certainly a lot easier, but you guys are you're the listeners, right? So you guys obviously have a pretty good sense of what you want to hear. So yeah, definitely hit me up. But all right, how about we get into this though? Like I said, these episodes, I don't want to keep you guys too long. I always say that and it ends up being an hour. But before we get going, of course, I have to talk about the sponsors. I'm a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. There's over 50 shows in the network. All the NHL teams are represented. So whatever team you're a fan of, there is a show for you. Of course, they're constantly spitting out new content. I mean, as there's games every week, right? So they always have something to talk about. But definitely check that out. For my off-network friends, of course, I got Part-Time Ole down there in Florida, Five for Fighting podcast. I don't know. He's gallivanting all over the countryside. He's phoning from his... he's texting me today from the airplane ride back from Utah from hunting or whatever he was doing, running around in the woods anyway. And he'll be back here shortly, back from vacation. I don't know, that guy's whole life seems like a vacation, but you know, when he gets around to hitting record, I'm sure he'll be putting up an episode here later this week or something, you know, tell us all about his adventures, you know. So we'll see what that's all about. I'm sure he'll have some East Coast Hockey League news and all that. But in the meantime, definitely give his back catalog a check. Check it out. Yablonski, Rob Ray, Bialowis, Segroy, they're all there. Great back catalog. Does a bang up job. As much as it pains me to say it, he does do a very good job. So, definitely. And he's also the creator of the Enforcer Appreciation Group. Should we be thanking him or hating him for that? I don't know. These times I've spent in these groups here lately, we'll get into that shortly. But if you happen to be on Facebook, join the Enforcer Appreciation Group. Lots of good pictures and videos getting put up. Obviously, a few jokers in those groups, but we try to weed them out as quickly as possible. And, But definitely give it a check it out. But the Five for Fighting podcast, Alec does a tremendous job. Give it a listen. And then also, Broadway Joe Lazzito. Give it a Lazzito. Out in New York, the king of New York. His headquarters is the most famous arena in the world, MSG. That's where you're going to find him. That's where they put him. They put him at the epicenter. At HQ, the king cheese. Joe Lazzito. Like I said, he runs Coliseum Chronicles. It's a New York Islander-based podcast. Although I think Joe's branching out not only to lacrosse with the Riptide, but he might be there might be some Ranger Blue there happening soon. I don't want to, whatever. I think Joe's really branching out. He wants to cover all of New York. And, next thing you know, he's rocking around Long Island and he's on furlough. All of a sudden, wham, he's back at it at MSG. Just like that. Faster than you could say, wake me up before you go, go. Joe's there. If you ever have, if you need tickets, whether it to be Billy Joel or a Broadway show or a production, Joe's the guy to talk to. I'm telling you. But he also, like I said, his podcasts are tremendous. He's got a great back catalog. He's talked to Fakoda, Gillies, Asham, Strudwig, on and on. You know, I'm waiting for the Troy Millett interview next, you know, but we'll see. He hasn't crossed that Ranger Bridge yet, but I don't know. I think he's teetering on it. We'll see. But, yeah, but definitely give his show a listen. His latest episode is, it's a solo episode, and Joe's complaining about Christmas music and the such and such things. So it's a very Grinchy effort on his part, and I can wholeheartedly appreciate that. So give it a listen. But no, Joe's got a great back catalog, and he's busy at work like we all are right now, and he's doing his best to bring you guys content as we all are. But it can be a grind for sure. And then, like I said, when you have guys no show and everything else, it gets a little frustrating. But Joe will bounce back, and he'll have some stuff for you guys in no time. But definitely check it out, Joe Lazito. Give it a Lazito. All right, guys, what are we going to talk about today here on this abbreviated version of the Fourth Line Voice? Well, we have agents talking too much on Twitter. Gordie Howe as the best fighter. An interesting conversation I had. Tony Twist or Wendell Clark? I'll let you guys decide that one. I'd like to hear your feedback on that. And another top 10 list. But what should we do first? Yeah, well, we'll do this agent shit talking thing. Oh yes, I also want to briefly talk about Austin Matthews. I'll do this agent thing first. If everybody remembers, was it last year or was it the year before? I think it was last year. Alan Walsh, the player agent, came out on Twitter during the playoffs with the Golden Knights and did the whole how they're screwing over Marc-Andre Fleury and everything else, with his little meme with the stick going through the heart and all this shit, and right during the playoffs and everything too. Everyone saw where did Fleury end up this, you know, after that, despite loving Las Vegas and everything else. Well, he's back at it, and on Twitter here, before he blocked me for pointing this out. Okay, I gotta dig up the tweet here, but okay. Oilers defenseman William Lagesson had his best game in the NHL Friday night. What happens? Dave Tippett never told him he's out tonight. Didn't tell him to skate with the scratches. He finds out just before the game. It's this kind of disrespect from a coach that destroys teams. Oh, yeah. Well, so, and then he has another one. William has done everything asked of him by this organization. Players getting scratched and have no issues with that. All we ask is to be treated with respect, and Dave Tippett has shown he doesn't care to do that with his players. Oh, yeah. So, like I said, so Big Mouth is back at it. Of course, it later comes out that they were waiting to see Darnell Nurse's status. It was a game day or game time decision, but it was also pointed out that assistant coach Jim Playfair did talk to the William kid and told him he wasn't playing. So I don't know where so I'm sure the kid was probably venting in a text message in the locker room or whatever to his agent, like they do. There's no whatever. There's nothing wrong with that. But then said agent, Big Mouth Allen here, decides to go flap his fucking lips on social media. And it's like, okay. And then it comes, and like I said, then it comes out as reported by the Edmonton News later that Playfair talked to him. Well, you don't have any follow-up tweet saying, oh, sorry, we were wrong or whatever. No, nothing. Radio silence. And Walsh, Big Mouth, he has a podcast. I'm sure he'll be on there whining and complaining and whatever. And it's amazing reading this, like the feedback on the, or the, what's the replies. Of course, the typical hockey Twitter idiots get in there and they don't
fucking know their ass from a hole in the ground. But, of course, Jason Strudwick, the former player, I unfortunately probably own the NHL record for most time healthy scratched. The news has been delivered to me in many different ways, including a couple by a trainer. Even that didn't destroy the team. Yeah, so basically Strudwick's telling this guy, shut up with the dramatics. But Strudwick's too nice to say that, but I'm not. But, yeah, douche. It's like, you got Fleury, basically. You don't think Fleury got run out? Like, that didn't, I'm just saying. Like, you think that helped his staying in Las Vegas? And now here's his client here, this young kid who's a fringe NHL player. You got your agent flapping his lips on social media, causing issues with Tibbett and them, who was a former player. And as someone pointed out, there's been no ex-players or anything bitching about him ever. He's got apparently a very good reputation with the players. But of course, like I said, Allen Big Mouth here. What's going to happen to this kid? I'm interested to see going forward what happens. I bet you it's back to the bus leagues for you, kid. Your agent's got a big mouth. So, I mean, it'll be interesting. Does that get held against him? I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's a business and it's about winning and performing. So, I mean, if they need him, I mean, they'll use him and stuff. But, I mean, if it's going to be between the end of the day, if it's between him and somebody else, they'll probably go with the one that's less of a fucking nuisance. And he can thank his agent for that. So, no, it's just amazing to me that... And like I said, all these people fucking chime in on Twitter, have no idea what's going on, but oh, they got to flap their lips like they're in the know. Well, they heard, they know, they read. Oh, if Alan said it, it must be true. Oh, if it's on Twitter, it must be true. Like, you know, never, you know, we won't wait for after the game when the coach actually addresses this or a media member could talk to him about it. No, we'll just jump right to conclusions, right? It's like anything on social media. Guilty before, but then you have to prove your innocence. Like, you morons. Oh, it's just so typical. But Austin Matthews, I was saying that before. Of course, he gets into the big wrestling match there with what Dubois from Winnipeg, and all social media is just up in arms. It's just terrible that this could happen. And Dubois is such a goon. Oh, yeah. This the wrestling, and oh, it was a minor penalties. And I mean, if you go and watch, it's, you know, no one's noticing Matthews actually holding a stick. But, you know, whatever. And like I said, I don't give a shit. I don't, like, about either of these players, these teams, or whatever. But I just find it amusing. It's both funny and sad all at the same time. Again, like, I know all these different fans, they like to point out different fan bases, or only if it's Bruins, they're just like this, or typical Flyer fan, or typical Leaf fan. And, you know, you're all clowns. All of you. You're all clowns. I don't have a dog in this fight, so I just make fun of all of you. But I will say, I think just due to the team's popularity, there definitely seems to be more Leaf fans out on social media, just because they're probably the most popular team in the league. The amount of crying that these douchebags do, like Spezza knees the guy, gets 6 games. Tonight they're crying about Tom Wilson. Wilson hasn't even done anything, but they're like, oh, but if I've been Wilson, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, he need him. You know, so it doesn't matter. Like, if they'd given him 1 game, people would be crying that it wasn't enough. Oh, he's getting star treatment. If it's 6 games, oh, now it's too much. Like, you can't win with you guys. And then, of course, all these writers are crying that, oh, because they have the Matthews incident. Oh, this is just typical of the NHL. It is? Oh, yeah. It's typical of the NHL, is it? I don't know. Doesn't seem to happen in the very few games that I'm watching. When I have to watch it, there's nobody getting involved in anything. But I laugh, oh, is this how they... And then, of course, the Leaf coach. Oh, shockingly, it's the Leaf coach that's crying about his player getting mugged. Gee, who would have thought? Matthews hasn't gotten a penalty all year. Oh, okay, so he hasn't drawn penalties. We're upset about that. You know, I'm sure there's a stat for that, drawn calls, because that's what everybody wants to see, people drawing calls. This is what happens when you have unskilled players mugging superstars. Oh, okay. The league is so friggin' cookie cutter now. I'm like, Matthews will score his 40 and 50 goals. I don't know. Ovechkin doesn't seem to have a problem scoring. Crosby, McDavid, they all seem to score. Matthews is scoring. Where is all this? They're getting mugged. It's like all the drama of it. Like, you just have to exaggerate to try to make your... When you have to exaggerate the bullshit to make your point, who are you kidding? Most nights, this pond hockey bullshit, there's nobody doing anything. But, oh, this one time, oh, we got to replay this video over and over again of DuBois and Matthews rolling around on the ice. Like, somehow this is just regular. This happens all the time. No, it doesn't. What are you talking about? Of course, all the Leaf fans, oh, yeah, it's regular occurrence. And, oh, no, it's not. You know, oh, and then this, the refs don't like us. All it is the us and we crowd crying. Oh, the refs don't know their job and they should just fire them all. What would it matter? Okay, so they fire them all. Bring up the American League refs. In two games, you'll be crying about them. People have been crying about referees since the beginning of sport. I'm sure at the Colosseum they cried about referees. Back in the Roman times. Oh, feed the lions. I don't think there was any referees. You know what I'm saying. Since the beginning of the NHL, people have cried about the refs. And every diehard fan, doesn't matter what. It's interesting. Every fan base says the refs are against them. Okay, well then, who are they against then, apparently? Because every fan cries about it. Every fan will cry that their team is getting screwed. Oh, these refs, they just have it in for trouble. They want Tampa to win. They want this team to win. And, oh, the golden child and all this. Okay, like, yeah, sure. I will say this. Auston Matthews, when that scrum is going, dude, you're 6'3", 230. Show some balls already. I have never seen a more gutless player in my life. And I mean, whatever, Leaf fans, listen to this. You can fucking yell and bitch to me all you want. Does he have any jam whatsoever? All I see him is just acting like it's a big joke. And like last year during the playoffs, oh, everything was funny in scrums. He's got a big stupid smile on his face and somehow, and mouthing off, like somehow he's above it all. Then with this thing with DuBois who's swinging you around, what are you, and you're just standing, oh, what are you, who, me? Trying to draw a call. It's not the point. Show some friggin' grit, man. Seriously. You're such a pussy. It's unbelievable. Like, you're a big dude. Fight. Like, I'm sure you're strong as a friggin' ox. Dude, fight back. Like, really? Like, you get in scrums, it's a big joke. You got a smile and you're laughing and face washing and you're losing, but everything's just funny. I don't care, bro. Attitude. Oh, okay. You ever look at Crosby? Like, you can say whatever you want about Crosby. Look at Crosby. Look at the intensity on his face. The game could be in the middle of friggin' January, and nothing game, but and he gets into a scrum. He ain't laughing. Is McDavid laughing? Do they just let themselves get flung around, and they stand there with their arms out and get knocked around and looking at the ref? And no. Like, somebody sit this kid down and tell him to grow a pair. Now, I'm not saying, next game he's got to go drop the gloves and go toe-to-toe at center ice. But maybe, now and again, it would help. Show something. And all I read is, you goofy Leaf fans, this is future captain material. No, it's not. Just think back to the Leafs captains. With Gilmore and Sundin and all these guys. Did they sit there and smile in scrums and let themselves get thrown around? No. It's embarrassing. He's got like this martyr thing going or something. Like, I don't know. But it's like, oh, well, he's not getting any calls. Who gives a shit if he's not getting any calls? You know what the visual looks like? He looks like a giant bitch. I have nothing against Austin, Matt. I really could give a shit about any of this. I'm just telling you from an outsider, when I see all these incidents that I see him involved in, he does nothing. Just gets shoved around like he's 5'8" and 180 pounds. And the dude's like the biggest guy on the ice. Like, show something, man. Jesus. Anyway. I was saying earlier, I had a discussion with a guy. Well, then he ended up talking stupid. And like, as most Facebook discussions go, it can't be civil. All of a sudden, he's got to start name calling and being an idiot. But it was initially brought up. It was an interesting. I had put up a picture of Joey Koser with the Blades, and somebody had commented that how him and Clark were the two toughest guys or whatever. Somebody mentioned Twist, and of course this guy, oh, Twist is what? He's nothing compared to these two. Oh, here we go. Okay. So, in terms of fighting. So, my contention was in talking with him, and I like Wendell Clark's one of my favorite all-time players. Like I said, I like all the guys that were involved in this conversation, Koser, Twist, and Clark. But all my point of the discussion was, like, Wendell Clark wasn't the same level of fighter Tony Twist was. Like, Twist was like a super heavyweight fighter. Wendell fought Probert, and then he fought Marty, and he did Kordick, and he did well. And then, oh, well, this guy brings up the KOs and TKOs, and Wendell had way more punching power than Tony Twist had. Okay, all right. Sure he did. Oh, well, but Wendell Clark had all these KOs of... And then he lists, like, Mike Lawler and Ed Beers and Ed Hospodar and, you know, and, oh, yeah, a real, like I told him, a real murderer's row there you got of, I said, well, Twist never fought anybody like Ed Beers, so I guess he didn't have an opportunity to knock him out. Well, how many knockouts did Twist have? I'm like, well, so I said, he broke Ray's face, knocked out Peluso, dropped Link Gates. Oh, Link Gates, that was in the IHL. Like, somehow that matters. I'm like, it matters where Link Gates plays pro? I'm like, oh, yeah, because it didn't happen in the NHL, so it doesn't count. Yeah, because, you know, Link Gates is no Mike Lawler or Ed Beers. Like, really, dude? Like, I know you're trying to make your big case for Wendell here, but it's like, eh. And he goes, well, Wendell could throw with both hands and had better technique. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize toughness was based on style points. Much like Craig Berube famously said when somebody... Or he goes, oh, Twist was just big and threw right hands and ragdoll people. And I said, well, he didn't need any... Wendell could throw both hands. I'm like, well, Twist didn't need a left. You know, it's like what Craig Berube said the one time when somebody asked him, hey, Chief, why don't you ever throw any left hands? He said, I never needed to. That's what Twist never needed to. So, okay, so Wendell could throw with both. All right. You know. But... And again, I love Wendell Clark, but he is not in the fighter category that Tony Twist was. And then, all, of course, then with any time Twist gets brought up, oh, it's the roids. Or are we talking before the roids or after? Okay, well, when did he start taking roids? Oh, I'm just saying. Well, that's not an answer. Everybody likes to claim that Twist was on steroids. All right. Did he ever admit that he was on steroids? Did a positive test ever come out? Like, okay, that, and do you really, I'll put it this way, do you really think he was the only, if he was really on him, do you think he was the only one? Yeah, I don't think so. But regardless, okay, well, when did he start taking steroids then? If this is your big argument, when can you point to it? And then it just becomes, yeah, okay, whatever, man, I guess he's your cousin. Oh, all right, whatever. So then it just got stupid, but... I will say with the Wendell argument, like you said, he brought up incidents of Cam Neely and Lou Francis Getty. And I'm like, well, Wendell basically jumped them. Like, Neely had one glove still on. Francis Getty didn't even know he was in a fight. But you want to call these TKOs? It's like, all right. Like, I'm not, go, it's all on YouTube, folks. Go look. I mean, if you want to call them knockouts, well, TKOs, nobody was knocked out. But, all right. I said, it'd be interesting, how good of a fighter would Wendell have been if he actually had squared off with people? Like, I don't mean that as a slight or a diss, but really, like, and hey, and I'm all for, hey, it's a fight, get your gloves up, you're going to stand around opening your lunchbox to get what you get. I don't have a problem with it. I'm just simply saying, you know, when you get the jump on a lot of guys and you've landed three before they even have their gloves off, it's like, well, all right. You know, again, I don't have an issue with it. I'm just simply pointing out that this is what's happening on some of these videos. So your qualifications for a TKO are getting pretty loose to try to make your argument here. Now, again, Wendell is a great fighter, tenacious, would fight anybody, fearless, all that. This is the difference. I don't have to put one down to make it's not even winning an argument. It's not the win. To make my point, I don't need to shit on Wendell as a fighter. Wendell is a great fighter. I'm just simply pointing out that, well, Twist didn't have as many knockouts. Well, Twist was fighting a whole different level of fighter than Wendell Clark was most of the time. Wendell stepped up and fought some heavyweights now and again, without a doubt. But you go and look at Twist's card, it's all the heavyweights. He didn't have any Ed Beers on there. Or, you know, Dirk Grahams. Hey, Dirk Grahams, a gritty dude, whatever. Cam Neely, guys like that, power forwards. Like, those are the guys Wendell should have been fighting, without a doubt. But I'm just saying, Twist wasn't. He was fighting, you know, whatever, LaRue and Ewan and Grimson and Probert and all these guys. McKenzie. He had trouble with McKenzie, although he got him in the end. But yeah. You see, and Link Gates and stuff like that. That's who he was fighting. So it's a different level. Like, well, you have more knockouts. Well, that's like you know, this guy was over at the elementary school knocking people out. Well, this guy was over at the high school fighting people. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's not a very good example because that's shortchanging Wendell. I don't mean to shortchange Wendell. That's what I just said. I'm not trying to put a guy down. I'm not trying to put him down. I'm just simply saying the level of competition was different. And I don't know. I've never heard, I mean, outside of like Leaf Homers and whatever, a rational hockey fight fan, I have never heard any of them ever put Wendell Clark ahead of Tony Twist. Now, if you want to, whatever. But I'll leave that up to you guys. Let me know what you... Oh, and then the other one was with Koser. He's like, well, Koser beat Twist. And then after that, Twist avoided Koser like the plague. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, well, first of all, Koser and Twist were friends. So they wouldn't have actively seeked each other out anyway. The fight in the NHL with Koser was a Twist's third fight in the league. So Koser's trying to give his friend an NHL shot because he is an established fighter at this point. So he's going to give Twist an opportunity. If you go and watch the fights, Koser punches him, what, seven times in the body shots. So he clearly wasn't going for the huge knockouts. Now, if you want to, oh, he won. Okay, then Koser won. Whatever. He landed six body shots. Okay, big win. Big win. But then to think the Twist avoided Koser like the plague, I quote. Okay. Like, see, why, like, that's the one thing I've always said with social media or these groups and discussions. You can have a good, honest discussion with the guy. And we were putting video back and forth and I was enjoying the conversation and we were kind of taking some funny digs at each other. But then you just got to go stupid. And then you start talking stupid, like, avoided him like the plague. Like, yeah, the guy that fought Probert five times and McKenzie multiple times and Ewan multiple times and all this, and loved to fight, but from all accounts, loved it. But you somehow think he was scared of Joe Koser. Oh, yeah. Okay. Like, really? Like, why? And then, of course, then you got to start using stupid words and mouthing off, and it's like, okay, we're done talking. You know, but I'm sure he's sitting there, I won that battle, behind his keyboard. Oh, you did. Yeah, you showed me. But I'm interested to hear what you guys think. You listeners out there, just drop me a line. Maybe do it in the show posts or just, I'm just curious to what you guys think. Clark or Twist? Am I up my ass? Maybe I am. I'm not saying I'm always right. To me, it's not even, they're not even the same, I don't know, same league. That's not, it's just a different size category, different weight class. You know what I mean? Like, and it's not a slight to either guy, but I just don't see it. But whatever, that's just me. But let me know what you think. Oh, and then, of course, on the the Bob Probert fan page. Oh, this one. This could actually be. Well, this could be a myth versus reality. I mean, I guess we could do that. I haven't done those for a while, but this could definitely be the myth versus reality. Is the Gordie Howe was this great fighter? The myth of Gordie. We all grew up with it. Our parents, our grandparents. Gordie was the best, and oh, the best fighter. No one wanted to fight him. Everyone was scared of him, and on and on. Oh yeah. You know, and we grew up hearing these stories, and I mean, if you type in Gordie Howe fights on Google, just type in Gordie Howe fights. The first, I think, dozen articles come up. Oh, is him just destroying Lou Fontanato, and on and on and on. But if you actually go back and read actual accounts, like on newspapers.com or what have you, if you go back and read actual accounts, not from the Detroit paper, actual accounts of the fight, it was a lot closer than what goes on. But old Gordie made his reputation by ending Fontanato, and oh yeah, on and on. For the longest time, Fontanato claimed that he actually won the fight. So, now, again, that's Lou saying that, but I mean, oh, but did you see the pictures? Did you see him? Well, he had a broken nose. I mean, there's been lots of guys that break their nose in fights. That, you know. But somehow that just indicates how vicious Gordie was. Well, okay. Like, Mel Engelstad had his nose broken 14 times. So, I mean, you know, whatever. What does that mean in a fight? You know. No, I'm not sitting here saying that Gordie didn't win the fight, because by all accounts, you know, by the accounts, he did. But he took some shots, too. Like, Lou landed some shots, too. It wasn't this one-sided ass-kicking that everybody loves to throw around. It reminds me of, like, the Larry Robinson, Dave Schultz thing. Everyone talks like it's this grandiose beating. Well, Schultz steps on a stick, and Robinson yanks him down and hits him about 3 times, and they're down. But all of a sudden, it's fucking Larry started the lawnmower on him and ended the hammer. Okay. But I'm like, there's video of that, yet people still believe this bullshit. And like I said, that's where the myth and the reality thing comes in. Like, you type it in, and I have all these guys, when I said, like, Gordie Howe averaged a fight a year. Like, I look, okay, he played 2,450 games, 1,767 in the NHL, 157 NHL playoff games. 419 WHA games, 78 WHA playoffs, 32 seasons, 22 confirmed fights, 2 Gordie Howe hat tricks. He recorded 1 major in 419 WHA games. Oh, yeah, but remember, he was 50, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, he was. But he was dirty as shit. Like, I laugh, all you clowns that love to yell about the code and respect, but oh, you just eat up the Gordie Howe shit. Oh, if you saw someone doing what Gordie did, you'd be crying in hysterics about what player safety and everything else. But, oh, when it's Gordie, it's a legend. Like, somebody brought it up. I think it's when a superstar is a decent fighter, all of a sudden his fighting ability gets greatly exaggerated. First of all, and then, like, well, no one wanted to fight Gordie. That's always the good one. No one ever wanted to fight him. Oh, okay. Well, by all accounts, Fern Flamin did multiple times, tried to fight Howe, and Howe wouldn't fight him. It was actually, that was in the newspaper.com article that I read too. And there was an interview with Flamin who said the same thing. You know, and so, but all of a sudden, of course, he's full of shit. Oh, yeah, but, you know, but everybody's saying how great Gordie was. They're not, though. Okay. Like I said, there's got to be some perspective in the discussion. There's one guy that wrote a really good piece on the 22 Howe fights and broke down some of the information that he got from his investigating. And most of these fights were nothing, bunch of nothing, give or take, and body slam down. There was no Gordie ending anybody. But again, this oversized reputation of Gordie Howe fighting. And, oh, you could stick Gordy in any era and he'd handle himself. Oh, sure he would. Okay, man. Like, just stop. I always say, oh, no one wanted to fight him because they were scared of him. It's like, well, Bob Probert had 300 fights, you know. I think Probert was probably a little scarier than Howe was, but he had no problem fighting a fight. Now, granted, it was a different era, and they didn't fight like they do now. Or, well, no, they don't fight at all. No, it's exactly like it is now. But they didn't have, like, real designated... There's a couple guys, Flamin, maybe, you know, or whatever, Reg Fleming, guys like that. But even then, it wasn't like they were one-shift goons. You know, there were six teams, so you had to, you know, you had to play. So, yes, they didn't fight as much as they, obviously, when it became more... 60s, 70s in vogue to have enforcers and that type of thing. So there just wasn't, Gordy wasn't going to have a lot of fighting majors just because they just didn't really do that. There was a lot more stick swinging, elbows, stuff like that. Just real dirty shit rather than fists. I don't know. And then, like I said, so this guy brings that up. So I had mentioned how all these things that, you know, how it's just a myth. And like, if you actually do any reason, and of course, what planet are you on? And all the, oh, you don't get it. And all that. No, I'm the only one that does get it. I'm like, I'm actually the only one I can guarantee out of all these comments in this group that are just shitting on me. I can guarantee I'm the only one that's done any research into this. The rest of you are just regurgitating what old Pappy told you while he's sat cross-legged around the transistor radio at Christmas. Like, let me regale you kids with stories of Gordy. You know, and again, this isn't to knock the legacy of Gordie Howe or anything like that. I just think it's like anything with him, Chara, Larry Robinson, these star, superstar players that could fight not bad. They're all of a sudden, it just becomes multiplied because they're great players. They're great players. They're great fighters too. And it's like, no, they're not. But, you know, and it's just, you know, and I mean, you know, but same Bobby Orr, you could put Orr in there as well. Now, could he fight? Yeah, all right. Was he feared by anyone that could fight? No. Just like Howe and these guys, like, we're like, enforcers or fighters scared of these people? No. But because they didn't fight them, some of these fans just get this inkling that, well, it's because they're scared of them. They knew better to not mess with them. Oh yeah. No, they'd much rather take their chances and fight Terry O'Reilly than Bobby Orr. Like, really? Like, okay. It's just stuff like that. And it's like, Howe, Grant, definitely a different era, but was Gordy a great fighter? No. Well, I don't want to, like, I can't say he wasn't. There's not a lot of video, but if you go by and read the articles that are out there that are supplied by old fight fans, you go back on the old, see, this is where the old fight forms are missed. This was a big topic on a few of the fight forums, and people would bring up old articles and Hockey Digest, the Hockey News, newspapers.com. They'd find from different newspapers. And it was tremendous. And the information was excellent. And you could really do some research and dig out the truth. Or as much of the truth that you could find without video, obviously. And but when you do that, and then you start... And you make, I'm not making claims. I researched it and I'm giving you what my findings were from accounts of people that were there. But right away it's, oh yeah, so what's your issue with Mr. Hockey? Guess you don't like him, hater. What does that mean? Well, I don't have a problem with Gordie Howe. What are you talking about? Just because I haven't bought into Grandpappy's myth and I did some research, right away, oh, well, you're a hater. Okay, so seeking the truth makes you a hater all of a sudden. Yeah, all right. You know, and I don't know. I guess when people are faced with, you know, this hero worship, then all of a sudden there's chinks in the armor. The initial reaction is to fight back, I guess. But That's fine. These people, these in this friggin' fan group, can call me whatever they want. And I mean, I did the research; they didn't. So, you know, whatever. But there we go. That was a myth versus reality that I didn't know I was doing. But yeah, Gordie Howe's toughness. It wasn't a myth. He was tough, without a doubt, but far more dirty than tough. And from all accounts and reading it and stuff, it's sort of Mark Messier, there's a perfect example. Maybe, you know, extremely dirty, lousy fighter, but everybody, oh, you didn't mess with Mark. Well, yeah, because he cross-checked you in the face. You didn't mess with Gordie. Yeah, because he'd probably elbow you in the face or stick his teeth, knock your teeth out with a cross-check. He wouldn't do it with a fight, you know, so yeah, that's why he didn't mess with him. Didn't want to stick in the face. But anyway, myth versus reality, Gordie Howe. Discuss amongst yourselves. But here, let's get to that list here. Hold on, I got the power of editing here. I got to hit pause, then we'll go from there. Here it is. I had to dig it up. It was. I want to thank Michael for on Twitter for retweeting this or attaching me to it. It was an article, and I can remember this article. I had this magazine. It was the 91-92 hockey yearbook from the Sporting News. This article is written by Jeff Gordon. I guess it'd be like going into the 92-93 season. It was like in the summer. But goons throwing even more weight around. Yeah. An alarming trend is developing among enforcers, says Brian Burke, the director of hockey operations for the Canucks. The size component of these players has gone upward, Burke said. A guy who weighs 210 is not a heavyweight anymore. Geno Ojic, 6'4", 230. The weight class has moved up. Ty Domi, 200-pounder. As tough as he is, he will be out of that weight class. Given the increased demands on sheer size, what are the most menacing enforcers in hockey today? The top 10. So this is the top 10, according to... Although there's some comments from guys, but yeah, Jeff Gordon... Like I said, the Sporting News. Bob Probert, Detroit Red Wing player like Craig Cox, Ewan Crowder have made their careers by briefly rocking Probert, the most feared man in hockey. What makes Probert especially effective is he's skilled enough to play full-time. Bob Probert plays first, Red Wings coach Brian Murray said. He is able to do the rest of these things if he feels he has to protect his teammates. Number two, the Bomber, Baumgartner. He's huge and willing and has lots of flowing blonde hair, just like Marty McSorley. On a good team, this guy would be a folk hero. As Lazito pointed out, he was a folk hero, though, even on the Islanders. But, yeah, the Bomber. I love Ken Baumgartner. He's tremendous. Number three, Dave Brown, Philadelphia. Back in Philadelphia after an unhappy stay at Edmonton, Brown still makes Burke's personal top three. But St. Louis Blues general manager Ron Curran isn't impressed. A guy like Brown does nothing. And I keep the word nothing, Curran said. He doesn't fight. Nobody wants to fight him. Well, that's sort of, wouldn't that be sort of doing his job then? I don't know. That sour grapes. Sounds like sour grapes to me. I would say Brown was probably a very effective enforcer. Number four, Troy Crowder. By buckling Probert in a key early encounter last season, the Quiet Warrior moved into title contention. He followed that by scoring a string of impressive fight victories. I've been hit before, but that guy hits hard, said San Jose's Cox, who engaged Crowder last season while with Vancouver. Nobody knows if he can throw a left, if he can fight a lefty or throw a left. His fights never last long enough. Yeah, the whole Troy Crowder thing, that was a myth versus reality that I brought up a few episodes ago that I won't go too much into. If you can go back and check out the back catalog and listen to it, but the guy was great for about five fights. But of course, at this point, this is just right in the middle of what they thought would be his career, right? So I have hindsight on my side, but yeah. Anyway, number five, terrible Tim Hunter. Calgary Flames, a softball-sized mound of scar tissue that passes for Hunter's nose tells the story. This guy sticks his face in everybody's business. He was limited to 34 games last season, and the Flames suffered for it. Yeah, man, Hunter was one of those guys that, and I've said this about a bunch of different players over the time, I've come to appreciate now. At the time, I was never a Hunter fan when I was first getting fight. Well, I mean, he was at the Flames, so he was on Hockey Night in Canada every night. I saw Hunter all the time. But when you get a fight tape and you watch it, it was like, but, fairly mid-sized guy. I mean, I don't know how big Hunter would be, 6'2", maybe 6'1", 6'2". I know he was a big early kind of like weight training guy. It's not so funny to say that now, but back then he was a real workout guy, which was kind of a rare thing. And you could definitely tell in his fights, he was like a grappler wrestler guy, but he always did really, in the Battle of Alberta, you know, it was always him and Semenko. And you go back and watch those fights, Hunter handled Semenko pretty easy. I don't want to say easy, but he handled Semenko. And yeah, Hunter was really, was good. I mean, was he the most exciting guy? No, but did it for a long time and wasn't a bad player either. He's a guy I definitely want to get on the show. Number six, Darren Kimball. There you go. Moved up the rankings after clubbing Crowder well with the Nordiques. He beat the snot out of him, Burke observed. Yeah, I mean, I was always a big Darren Kimball fan. Yeah, that was the thing. Crowder was cruising, right? And that was right before the big rematch in January with Probert, and everybody was getting hyped for it. And Kimball kind of, was sort of wrecked the party, I guess, by getting Crowder early. But we were all pumped because we were big Kimball fans, right? So we were actually really pumped to see it. But yeah, if you go back and if you have an opportunity, go on YouTube, type in Darren Kimball. We'll watch those fights. You'll be entertained for hours. Dude was just wide open and took a few, but gave a few, and he was an exciting fighter, man. He was awesome. I love Darren Kimball. Number seven, Joe Koser, New York Rangers. Through battered hands has made him a suspect in the eyes of some scouts. He's still one of hockey's most dangerous men. Joey has a big punch, a KO punch, Cox said. He brings it from Florida and knocks you into next Thursday. Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. He always had the right, you know, and, I've not been critical of, because I'm a big Koser fan, but I've been critical of him in the all-time discussion. I said his fight card, to me in Detroit when he first started this fight, he was definitely Robin to Probert's Batman. And that's fine, I get it, but his fight card's littered with a lot of, once he got to New York, though, I think he became better, actually. But yeah, at the end of the day, he could put you out without a doubt. Number eight, John Kordick, Washington Capitals. The Capitals forgave the numerous team violations to keep him around for one reason. He enabled the Caps to run roughshod over the Patrick Division while he was in the lineup. He is one of hockey's pure goons, but bouts with alcoholism threaten his career. Yeah, this was the last stand for Kordick, really. And he went to Quebec briefly. Was he in Quebec after Washington? Yeah, briefly. And but then he was out of hockey, and then of course he passed away in the summer there. And 27 when he died, it was really sad. You know, I was a big Kordick fan. Mean, left-handed, was a far better player than he was ever given an opportunity to show. But like you said, he had his issues and all that. But yeah, it's too bad, because it would have been interesting if he had kind of stayed, if he could have gotten clean and found the right spot and was given a chance. It would have been interesting. Number nine, Marty McSorley, Wayne Gretzky's longtime bodyguard, has everybody's respect in the National Hockey League. That sort of changed after the Brashear thing. But, I mean, I shouldn't say that because, Marty had, like I pointed out to somebody, because as soon as you mention McSorley, it's like anything, they bring up the Brashear thing. Yeah, and, Marty forever tarnished his legacy because of that. But I also point out, well, he played 900 games before that, too. Not that he didn't have incidents before with the stick and being dirty, but he was also enforcing a lot of times. And he would go over to that line and he'd cross it to make his point. And that was enforcing. I mean, you can't do that anymore, and the league is showing for it. But at the time, yeah, he didn't. Was Marty the best fighter? No. Was he the best enforcer? It could have been, yeah. Because I always said that's two different things. And Marty was really good at it. Number 10, Gino Ojic. He stepped in and made such ruffians as Cox and Stern expendable in Vancouver, where rugged players are cherished. He had six fights with Brown, Burke said. They each won two, and the other two were draws. Yeah, I mean, Gino, man. You talk about folk hero in Vancouver. You know, again, Burry's bodyguard. He did a great job. Made sure no one touched him. And he'd go over the line, too, a few times. To be completely honest, I was never the biggest Gino fan. I think there's, I shouldn't say that. I'm surprised he never fought Probert, actually. That was the one I was surprised with. Although he fought Brown, fought everybody, Yeah, after he left Vancouver, he really faded out. I don't know if his passion sort of just declined. But I mean, especially back then, though, I mean, these guys would have 20, 30 fights a year. But they were also doing that junior before they got to the NHL. So, I mean, they did that for 2 or 3 years in junior. So a lot of these guys already, like, that's the one thing I brought up. I can't remember who I was talking to, but that's the one difference now. These guys coming up. I always use the term battle-tested. I mean, these guys that were coming up had 50, 60, 70 career fights in junior, let alone and then they get to the minors and they do it 20, 25 more times in a couple seasons. So these guys have 100 and some fights under their belt before they even get to the NHL, you know, and you just think Sean Thornton, how many of those fights did he have, you know, stuff like that. Ty Domi, how many fights did he have in Peterborough? You know, and then he gets to the American League and he's in Binghamton and whatever for a couple of years, probably, had, you know, 15, 20 fights down there. You know, then he gets to the NHL and he's the all-time NHL fight leader, whatever he had, 300 and some. Yeah, but he's at 4-something after you add junior and the minors to it, right? It's like, you know, which these kids today are, you know, not even, I mean, they don't even have double digits in fights. You know, and that's the rules. It's not their fault, but that's just the rules and the way the game is now. But my point being is, yeah, like with Ogic, he had those years in Vancouver. Then I'm sure injuries and everything caught up to him. And yeah, I just think of like Philly and the Islanders and Montreal. He just sort of faded away, you know. But yeah, for that time in Vancouver, what a run! Yeah, and he was definitely the man. He's loved him still to this day. He's loved in Vancouver. So that was a really interesting list. Now, it was funny when he posted that I was reading he didn't just like write it out. He showed the picture of the article. As soon as he had that article up there, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember having that magazine. Yeah, I must have read that article 1,000 times back in the day. Because like I said, in the early 90s, with no internet and stuff, would find it, a fight article or whatever, you cherish that shit, right? Because it was so rare. But so it was funny to see that article after all these years. But yeah, there you go, the top 10 of 91-92. Although, like, was that the top 10 according to Burke? Or I think it was because of the writer, but he just had Burke sound bites in there. Now that I'm thinking about it as I'm just sort of leaning back in the chair. But anyway, guys, that's like I said, I'll keep this short. I'm just under an hour. But, yeah, I just wanted to throw some audio information at you. And hopefully you guys enjoyed this. And like I said, I'm sure you guys are regular listeners are sick of hearing my voice. These last couple weeks, but bear with, and we'll be changing that shortly. But in the meantime, if you happen to be on social media, Fourth Line Voice on Twitter, on Facebook, give me a follow. And if you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, Fourth Line Voice on YouTube. I have over 2,600 fights, all leagues, junior to the NHL, minors, what have you. I've got everything sorted, so if you just go to my page and then do the little search thing, type in NHL, OHL, AHL, whatever you want. Boom, they'll all come up. Check it out. Just put some old school. I've been putting some old school fights up the last couple nights. Gillies and Paradise, Bob Paradise, and a really good Danny Garris, Stan Jonathan fight. Ben Wilson, Tiger Williams. Yeah, I'm just kind of going. It's an old 70s disc I was going through. Yeah, pretty. Some of it's a little grainy, but some of it's like really like the Wilson stuff. Like, just think that's like 1978, right? Like it's like almost 45 years old, crystal clear, looks really good, really really clean footage. So definitely give that a look. But yeah, guys, thank you very much for tuning in. Also, if you could rate and review my show on whatever platform you're listening to, it helps me out in the searches and that type of thing. And I hate to be this guy, but I always have to say it. Could you download? Well, it's too late now. You've listened. But I should have said that at the start. But in the future, if you're going to come back, I hope you do. Could you download my episodes? Don't stream them. I say it in all seriousness. I actually get paid by the download. So it helps me out. But it also helps with the tracking of the show and just you can see the peak times and listens and from where and demographics and all that stuff. So it doesn't help when you're streaming. It doesn't work that way. And I need you to download it. But the biggest thing is I need to get paid. Yeah. But, no, I'd really appreciate it. In all seriousness, I'd really appreciate that if you guys could do that. And one last thing, I was going to throw this out there. If, anybody listening, I've said it a bunch of times before. If, you know, with Christmas coming up and whatever, if you're looking for a hockey pitcher or what have you to maybe get framed or something, or you want to put a fight pitcher, a pitcher of Jeremy Roenick scoring the last goal in the Chicago Stadium, I have that pitcher. Again, drop me a line. I have thousands of pitchers. I can send you over, I'll email you over a high resolution, pick, and you can just, like I said, go to Kinko's or Staples or Walmart or wherever and get it printed out, frame it, looks awesome on the wall. So yeah, if anybody listening out there is looking for any pictures, let me know, I can hook you up. But, all right, guys, I'll get out of here. Thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you guys on Sunday. Thanks, everybody.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?